Kipps by H.G. Wells. Until he was nearly arrived at manhood, it did not become clear to Kipps how it was that he had come into the care of an aunt and uncle instead of having a father and mother like other little boys. He knew that a certain faded, wistful face that looked at him from a plush and gilt-framed daguerreotype above the mantel of the sitting room was the face of his mother. But the phantom mother that haunted his memory so elusively was not like that, though he could not remember how she differed. It was clear, however, that she handed him over to his aunt and uncle at New Romney with explicit directions and a certain endowment. One gathers she had something of that fine sense of social distinctions that subsequently played so large a part in Kipps' career. He was not to go to a common school, she provided, but to a certain seminary in Hastings that was not only a middle-class academy with mortarboards and every evidence of a higher social tone, but also remarkably cheap. She seems to have been animated by the desire to do her best for Kipps, even at a certain sacrifice to herself, as though Kipps were in some way a superior sort of person. His aunt and uncle were already high on the hill of life when first he came to them. They had married for comfort in the evening, or at any rate in the late afternoon of their days. They were at first no more than vague figures in the background of proximate realities. Such realities as familiar chairs and tables, pieces of firewood, old newspapers, the cat, the high street, the backyard, and the flat fields that are always so near in that little town. His aunt and uncle were, as it were, gods of this world, and, like the gods of the world of old, occasionally descended right into it. And, unhappily, one rose to their Olympian level at meals. Then one had to say one's grace, hold one's spoon and fork in mad, unnatural ways called properly, and refrain from eating even nice sweet things too fast. Sometimes, however, these gods gave him broken toys out of the shop, and then one loved them better. For the shop they kept was, among other things, a toy shop. They neither visited nor received visitors. They were always very suspicious about their neighbours, and other people generally. They feared the low, and they hated and despised the stuck up. And so they kept themselves to themselves, according to the English ideal. Consequently, little Kipps had no playmates except through the sin of disobedience, and he began a friendship with Sid Pornick, the son of the haberdasher next door that, with wide intermissions, was destined to last his lifetime through. Pornick the haberdasher, I may say at once, was, according to old Kipps, a blaring jackass, a teetotaler, and a nya-nya im-singing Methodist. This Pornick annoyed old Kipps greatly. Cavendish Academy, the school that had won the limited choice of Kipps' vanished mother, was established in a battered private house in the part of Hastings remotest from the sea. Its principal was a lean, long creature of indifferent digestion and temper, who proclaimed himself on a gilt-lettered board in his front area, George Garden Woodrow, FSSC, letters indicating that he had paid certain guineas for a bogus diploma. The memories Kipps carried from that school into afterlife were set in an atmosphere of stuffiness and mental muddle, and included countless pictures of sitting on creaking forms, bored and idle. But interspersed with the memories of this grey routine were certain patches of brilliant colour. The holidays. His holidays, which, in spite of the feud between their seniors, he spent as much as possible with Sid Pornick. They seemed to be memories of a different world. They were glorious days of mucking about along the beach, the siege of unresisting Martello towers, the incessant interest of the mystery and motion of windmills.